Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where sales leaders teach you what's working for them and how you can build it yourself.
This episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast is brought to you by our sales coaching and consulting services. Are you looking to create repeatable, scalable, and predictable revenue? We've helped thousands of companies grow their business with tailored expert advice backed by testing to ensure they establish the best practices that'll work for them. Head over to bit.ly/predictable revenue coaching to learn more.
Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Stewart, and today I'm joined by Darren Renke, and we're going to talk a little bit about self-limiting beliefs. And I think this is a bit of a left turn from the podcast because you're hearing my voice and not Sarah's this week. And if you're new to the podcast, I'm the original host and one of the founders of the show and the company. So nice to meet you if you're a new listener. And this was a fun one. So I say no to a lot of podcast requests. People reach out to me all the time and I usually forward them on to Sarah, or I'll just say straight up no. But when Darren mentioned that, hey, I want to talk about self-limiting beliefs and he's got a book and a pretty interesting story, I thought, I wish I had this conversation 10, 15, maybe a bit longer years ago when I first got into sales. Because when I think about the self-limiting beliefs that I had and maybe I think it would have had a tremendous impact. And specifically, like when I think about for myself, you know, I remember people saying, oh, you're going to be, you know, Colin, you talk a lot, you're friendly, you're going to be great at sales. And then I remember jumping into sales and I wasn't great at sales. And I was like, well, what the hell's going on? And so I had, you know, maybe not exactly self-limiting beliefs on that side. But I had, you know, this, yeah, I think that caused some other things that sort of cascaded down into some beliefs that maybe weren't helpful. And so I think having this conversation 15 years ago for me would have had a huge impact. So I'm bringing this conversation to you and I'm welcoming Darren to the show.
Great to be here.
So talk to me about self-limiting beliefs. What are they in your words? Because I think I put some words into your mouth and I had some things that sort of immediately came to mind when we first started speaking, but I'd love to hear from you.
Self-limiting beliefs, actually, I believe are probably one of the biggest impediments that get in the way of our own success. And I increasingly believe that for people that have a strong set of skills, good experience, that the only thing that really gets in people's way is their own head, what's between their two ears. I know that's true for myself. And for me, I wasn't necessarily always aware of self-limiting beliefs, but 4 or 5 years ago, a friend of mine, we used to do these nature walks. We talked about life and business and different things. And she said, Darren, it sounds like you're going to write a book. And at that time, I thought, you know, I always thought maybe I'd write a book if I had an interesting enough story to write when I'm in my 80s or if my grandparents or my grandkids and kids wanted to hear about my story. But, you know, at that point, a book was interesting because it was a way to package all the things that I was working on, I was thinking about, I was coaching, I was training, I was speaking to groups about into a neat package that people could consume and get a sense for what does Darren think about the world and specifically about leadership. But I had this nagging self-limiting belief in my own head about my ability to write. And what I realized was that it was because of, I didn't get into AP English in high school. I struggled, relatively speaking, to get grades in English in basically literature classes in college. And at that point I was pre-med and so I needed basically straight A's to get into med school, and it was challenging, but it wasn't really a indication of my writing ability. This is all realized in reflection. It was that I didn't necessarily get what Kafka meant in The Metamorphosis and other famous authors meant in their literature pieces. But unfortunately, I carried that forward. I internalized that in terms of being a limiting belief about my ability to write. So part of the reason why I started writing the book was to actually challenge that self-limiting belief. Obviously, I mentioned it was a great way to package the things I've been working on in one neat place. But I'd probably say almost more importantly, it was to prove to myself that I actually could write.
That's super interesting. And so this all came out of that nature walk.
The nature walk. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was interesting. I wasn't sure if it was a question. I think it really was a challenge to me. And it definitely was a challenge and forced me to go down that path. And honestly, the very beginning, I had a Word doc. It was blanking, you know, that blinking cursor of death. I'm sure people can all relate to, whether it was writing a college paper or writing a proposal or even writing an email to a prickly customer or whatnot. And so I started writing, early morning. I'm always an early riser, 5 a.m., midweek, weekends, vacations, et cetera, just trying to get through this book. And then eventually I started to work with some advisors, some friends of mine who'd written books, just try to organize it in a nice, tightly written package and just started moving forward. But honestly, it's one thing to start writing. It's another thing to actually tell people that you're going to actually write this book. Started with family, friends, close associates. Once I started telling clients, I do a lot of volunteer work with the Navy SEAL community and telling those guys that I was writing a book, and there was no backing out at that point. There's no way I could say, oh, I'm too scared to actually publish this piece. So writing it was one thing, but hitting go on the Amazon marketplace in terms of publishing it and putting it out to the internet court of opinion was a totally different endeavor.
That's super interesting. I'm curious, how did you get into coaching people or into this style of coaching?
So for me, it's interesting. If you asked me when I was 23 working at Accenture Management Consulting in the San Francisco office, working with all the Silicon Valley companies at that time, if you asked me which of the four competencies that Accenture had at that time, strategy, technology, process, and change management, if you said which one is least likely, easily change management. But now I find myself sprinting towards the softest of soft skills, self-limiting beliefs, values, authenticity, all of those things. And for me, I just didn't realize at the time, but I did primarily most of my career at that point was as a consultant and then did some of my own startup stuff. I started a surf travel company in Brazil. I tried to start a fledgling internet company at one point in time as well. And through getting back into consulting, I just observed so many different projects go into the ditch because of underdeveloped leaders and leadership teams. I realized that there was something that was missing there, but this was all likewise in reflection that I realized that a dear friend of mine and mentor, Annette, who used to run the global consulting business at Gallup, she said, hey, Darren, there's this coach training class that I'm going into. And I said, oh, coaching, that's interesting. I know from a sports context, I was always a big athlete in high school, at least a limited athlete in high school, played through my senior year. And I knew what it meant from a sports context, but didn't know what it meant from a business context. And at that time, I'd done a lot of mentoring. I had a pretty good job in terms of managing and mentoring people. And so I thought, oh, this could be kind of interesting. Okay, coaching in a business context. So I, unlike many things in my life where I actually didn't know what was going to come out the other end of this machine, this training program. And so I went through a 6-day course, it was an accelerated course over 6 full days, and came out going, wow, this is really probably the most 6 impactful days in my career to that point. Didn't think I wanted to be a full-time coach, but knew that this was really complementary to the consulting work I did because it's such a great way to either develop leaders to be more impactful, to be better communicators, or to develop cohesion within leadership teams. So that was the initial foray into coaching and then added on training as well, because a lot of clients would say, hey, Darren, that's great, but what can you do for our 75 managers? Or what can you do for our leadership team? So I started to get more into the training realm as well and found that to be a nice complement to the executive coaching work.
Right on. And so in the context today, like we're going to go through a little bit about, so I think if you made it this far, what are we going to get out? What is the listener going to get out of the podcast? And I think the thing that I was excited about was learning about Darren's framework of like that, how he coaches people around self-limiting beliefs, because I think there's a huge opportunity in the sales space. We're going to talk a little bit about we're going to talk about the framework. We're going to talk a little bit about process. And then we're going to go through a couple of tactical examples. So if you're coaching somebody that's struggling with X, how do you approach it? So that's how we're going to sort of tee up probably the next 30 minutes, 35 minutes. From there, let's talk about your framework. Because I found it really interesting when I think about self-limiting beliefs, it's like, okay, well, I would sit down and be like, what are they? But I don't think you can sit down with somebody and just say, hey, what are your self-limiting beliefs? And then I could just be like, oh, it's this, this, and this. There's obviously a discovery process. And so talk to me a little bit about like how you get there.
Definitely. So really with any change in behavior that we're trying to coach people around, we focus on three broad steps: intention, reflection, and action. And intention really is about setting your mind towards making that change. You have to be open to that change. So if you're not willing to, whether it's addressing a self-limiting belief, whether it's you want to develop better executive presence, you want to work on your communication, you want to work on your ability to empower people, you've got to be committed to actually make a change and get better at it. So that's the first piece. The second, which is really where a lot of the work and the deep introspection comes, is around reflection. So reflecting on the past experiences, what you extract from those stories and those experiences, and then action. So it's basically, what am I going to actually do? What am I going to commit to bring that intention to life, to combine that intention with that reflection in terms of action? But as it applies to self-limiting beliefs and how you can extract that, the easiest way is if you're working with somebody. Obviously, if I'm coaching somebody, I can catch them on things, you know, oh, I should do that. Oh, I could do that. Or, well, I'm not really ready for that. That's an easy thing as a coach, or even as a manager, if you're not a formal executive coach, just listening for your team members and people that you work with to just look for cues, look for triggers, you know, gosh, yeah, I'm not ready for that. Oh, I haven't sold to that audience before. Oh, I haven't done enterprise deals yet. I've only really worked in this mid-market and these small deals, or selling point solutions, whatever it may be. And it's listening for those kinds of cues is really helpful. I would say from an internal perspective, it's if you find these old tapes, as actually one of my clients starts to refer to these as old tapes, but with an old school reference now that we're all in the digital era, but mm-hmm. what are those old tapes that are spinning and playing in your head? It's whether I'm not good enough, I'm not ready enough, I didn't go to a good enough university, I didn't grow up in the IBM school of sales, or, you know, insert company name in terms of that. I haven't had success in selling into the life sciences space. I've only sold to manufacturing. I have only sold to mid-marketers, small, medium-sized business, and not to enterprise types of customers. It's catching yourself and hearing those tapes in your head and just reflecting and doing some even journaling around that. So that's where someone can actually do it for themselves. But honestly, it's going to be easiest if you're managing someone, you're coaching someone, is to really hear these things, what they're saying, and then try to get a sense for more about the reflection is, okay, let's dig into that self-limiting belief. So for me, as I mentioned, it was about writing, and I had to dig into, okay, well, is that really objective data? I said, well, where's that actually coming from? For me, it was because, okay, I got a B plus in college English. You know, I struggled to get a B plus, which doesn't sound terrible, but I was trying to get into med school and be able to control my life in that perspective. And so I read, okay, I can't do this literature thing, so I can't write. So it's like, well, there's no connection. There's, okay, let's actually decouple those things. Okay, well, what is it about writing? Do I have really any data that says Darren, you're a bad writer? Are you a luminary? You know, are you the next Mark Twain? Obviously not. But so it's really getting a sense for, is that really objective in terms of that data points? And then it's about a couple of things, which is, one is, can you fill that negative thought with something positive? Like, even if it's, that sounds a little probably woo-woo, but just in terms of having some sort of mantra or just a mindset of like, yeah, you know, I'm a good writer, or I'm a good enough writer. I can write something that's insightful. Are my prose going to be as well written as someone who writes a Malcolm Gladwell or someone like that? I don't know, but do I have insight that's relevant for people, that's interesting for people, that they can actually go and absorb? So in that sense, I was able to replace that thought or that negative thought with something different. And then honestly, I think a lot of it is just pushing yourself. If you find yourself feeling uncomfortable, it's actually a good warning sign that you should actually go do that. So for me, it was, okay, well, I'm going to start. And I had this highly curated LinkedIn audience that people had met, clients, people I went to business school with, an undergrad, friends from my life. And it's scary. You have this highly curated network, and now you're actually going to go out and you're going to drop some content on these people, and you're worried about judgment. But for me, it's like, I'm going to toss myself off the cliff and see if I can fly and just see what kind of feedback I got. So, but that was challenging, right? So it's like pushing yourself. It's replacing some of those negative thoughts with positive thoughts. But those are a couple of things. And that's moving to the action piece in terms of how you can actually overcome some of those self-limiting beliefs.
Cool. And so I think first step is to like, so you, if you're coaching somebody, making sure that we're looking at it objectively, looking at the source, and then like, where's the data coming from and what supports it?
Yep. Yeah. Perfect. Most times it's lack of data, right? It's a person's opinion. It's a comment. It's something even people's family say, goes, oh yeah, well, you know, we're the Smiths. We just don't get those kinds of opportunities. Oh, those other folks do. And those are really toxic thoughts and behaviors. And I think those are, a lot of people have that based on communities they grew up in, families they grew up in. Maybe they worked for smaller organizations that always looked up to the bigger companies. Mm-hmm. I know I worked for Accenture, it was a great company, but I always looked in the McKinsey's of the world, like, oh, McKinsey, you know? So it's like, oh, I wasn't a McKinsey guy. So there can be things about what companies you worked for, what roles you've had, where you grew up, what your background is, where you went to school, all those kinds of things.
Yeah, that's fair. I got 56% in Math 11 both times I took it. So I've always had that like limiting belief of, and I run into it every now and then. I'm like, oh, I'm not good at math, but like I'm a ninja with a spreadsheet and I've done a little bit of coding. Not enough that I would say I know how to code, but like I've done some things and I'm like, I've definitely run into that before where I'm doing something. I'm like, oh, I'm not good at math. I'm like, but I'm doing this. Yeah. So it's an interesting, interesting that they kind of exist in almost all of us, regardless of the where we came from.
Yeah, you make an interesting point also. And I'm a huge believer in the world of positive psychology and a believer in amplifying strengths and focusing on what you do great. Like, what are you really strong at? So yeah, maybe you're not, you know, good at math, which, you know, doing some sort of crazy calculations by hand, but who cares? Now you have a spreadsheet, right? You can create pivot tables and macros and all kinds of things like that. But regardless, it's like we all have individual strengths. And I think not having strengths envy of other people, focus on what you do really well and then try to mitigate some of those weaknesses.
It's really interesting. The dots hadn't connected yet, but I'm almost, my brain, I'm like mapping this to a sales process. And I remember reading this book in college on sales, and I can't remember the name, but they talked about the selling V, and it's like the one side of the V, you have to make sure that you have, you get to a point of mutual understanding where you understand what the client, like you both sides understand what the client is struggling with. And only once you've reached this mutual point of understanding, you earn the right to pitch. And it's almost the same kind of principle in your coaching process here. We're trying to look at it objectively. We're trying to get to a mutual understanding of like, what is this and objectively, and where did this come from? And all of those things before you're jumping in and saying, oh no, this is wrong. No, you're actually good at math and not just coming in with the opposite. And so we've gotten down the one side of like really identifying what it is, where it came from. And now we're kind of coming up the other side of, well, how do we create something positive from it? And so I think that's what you had hinted at, which is what can we replace that belief with? Can you talk to me a little bit about that and what that process looks like?
Yeah, I think it's what do you replace it with, but also just coming at the other side, as you mentioned, which is for me, it gave me an incredible amount of confidence to actually prove myself wrong. And, you know, seeing some of the data from the book sales and seeing some of the reviews and some of the comments, and, you know, it actually, you know, it was quite humbling in a lot of ways. I was like, wow, this is really cool. And it validated in some way, you know, my goal going in was, hey, like if I help one person, it was worth it. You know, I'm not sure all those hours, you know, one person would be worth it, but you know, that was my goal at the time. But so I think there's some validation when you actually prove that you can do it, or you even prove that you tried to actually go and address that thing, whether it was a colossal failure or not. Honestly, I felt like I was a success when I hit publish, regardless of what happened, because I took the effort, I took that chance to challenge that self-limiting belief. So whatever the validation on the other side is, that's almost irrelevant in a lot of sense. But to your question in terms of replacing that thought is, yeah, it really does come to what's something positive you can put in its place, looking at the data and saying, look, that's totally subjective. That's someone else's opinion. You know, my boss told me I'm not an entrepreneur. I'm not a great salesperson. I'm not ever going to be a sales leader. It's replacing that thought, but actually doing the work also to close those gaps. Because honestly, sometimes those beliefs probably have, and in a lot of cases, have some hint of truth to it. You know, gosh, I'm not ready to manage people. Maybe that's true. Maybe you've been an incredible hunter in terms of sourcing new deals, but okay, now you actually have to get hit your quota with and through other people. You're not actually the lone wolf out there hunting anymore. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of work to be done. There's books to read. There's training courses to go through. There's coaches to hire. There's mentors to partner up with who can actually help you with those things. So it's not just replacing it with those positive thoughts. I do believe that is really helpful, but in many cases, probably most cases, there's work to be done. For me, I went and started studying all sorts of different writers in different genres. And on one hand, I didn't want to look too closely because I didn't want to copy and paste and try to write in a style that I felt like the marketplace wanted. At the same time, what I learned from that was there's a lot of styles that can actually be successful for different people. So I think it's also, it's looking at what are some of those gaps you can actually close to eliminate that self-limiting belief as well.
Interesting. It sounds like what can you do to reinforce it, so to speak?
Yeah. Or just to prove that it's wrong. right? And to close those learning gaps. Because yeah, there's learning gaps, there's skills. I talk a lot about with clients in terms of, okay, to achieve that next goal, what are the skills, behaviors, experiences you need to develop? What are the perceptions you need to change also, frankly, too, especially if you're trying to move up to the management ranks in your org, which is you may have a perception based on a boss or two people above you that says, oh, this person doesn't have long-term talent at this org. You know, it's okay, what can I actually do to actually prove that wrong? So what I need to go learn and go do and to get better at.
It takes a certain level of like mental agility to be able to, I think for an individual to be able to get there. But I guess that's why you start with intention as part of your framework.
I think you're absolutely right in terms of agility. I mean, agility is not just an innovation word, right? I mean, agility is in terms of leadership agility. I'm a huge believer that as leaders, we need to all adapt our style to the recipient. So there's an assessment that we use as a communications assessment, basically, and it just creates awareness that, hey, we receive information in different ways. So it's like, let's not assume that you want to be communicated with in my preferred style. I need to meet you where you are. But the same thing goes in terms of how we actually motivate and work with different people. Is we have different people get excited, they get motivated by different things. Some people need acknowledgement. Some people don't. Some people need to be, you know, appreciated for every little contribution, where some people go, look, you know, my results are all on the scoreboard that's up there. You know, I hit my number, I crushed my number, whatever it may be. So there's different agility that's required from us as leaders.
What's the, just out of curiosity, what is the name of the test that you use there for the styles?
It's called the Strengths Deployment Inventory.
Strengths Deployment Inventory, not related to Strengths Finder. A different thing.
Correct. Yeah, they're complementary. StrengthsFinder is more, it's called Clifton Strengths now. That's more about your natural talents and skills. And this is really about communications and interaction. So it looks at, without getting too deeply into it, I'd say the number one thing, if you boil it down to one thing, which is we have different motives. You're motivated by people, process, performance, and then perspective or consensus. And there's some other ones as well. And it's that we all have different motives. So for me, I'm a very red for performance. So for me, it's Darren, let's get right to the point. I tend to be more risk-taking. I like to move really fast, and it allows you to actually tailor your communication style to the recipient.
Cool. And sorry, remind me the name one more time, just for everybody else that's also going to type it into Google right now.
Sure. Strengths Deployment Inventory.
Got it. Cool. I'm going to bookmark it for later. CoreStrengths.com. That sound about the right?
That's it.
Right link. Beautiful. All right. Thanks for that. I always like to, when I find these little tools or things that people are using that they found useful, I always like to kind of follow that rabbit hole. So we were talking about your process for coaching. We talked about looking at it objectively, looking at the source, checking the data, seeing if there's any data that still supports that. And if it does apply, then what are some things that you can do to get in that? So if your self-limiting belief is I'm a shitty manager and it turns out you are a shitty manager, the right thing isn't to just like tell you you're not a shitty manager. It's to help. Okay, we found the gap. Let's find some tools to fill those gaps. But let's say... Yeah.
And there probably is some positive element, right? You're not just a crappy manager across the board. There's got to be hopefully something you do well. You know, hopefully maybe you motivate people. Maybe you... I don't know, maybe not. Maybe it's just universally bad, but hopefully there's something positive you can pull from that.
I think if you're talking to Colin from a couple of years ago, there probably wasn't, but slowly got a little bit less worse and worse and worse over time. And so we talked about, so let's assume that you're working with somebody who is a bad manager, or sorry, who thinks they're a bad manager, but isn't. You know, you find that, hey, there's no data that supports that. What do you do next?
Well, I would say really focus in on that in terms of, well, let's look at the results you're getting of your team. Look at how they've improved their performance over time. Like this person went from a middling seller to someone who's actually at the top of the team, the top of the region, whatever it may be. I think so. It's getting that data and showing that. And I think it's also about having them acknowledge themselves, because it's so many times you don't have someone who's going to acknowledge you, whether it's the marketplace, whether it's your manager, whether it's your customers. And it's really important because life is hard, business is hard, especially if you're a high achiever who's pushing themselves in uncomfortable territories. That self-acknowledgement piece is really an important piece. But I mean, if they really are a good manager, yeah, then it's basically beating back that, you know, that untruth, right? And showing them that they are in positive ways. But as with everything, there's always an opportunity to get better. So it's okay, what are we actually going to work on? Okay, maybe you're a good communicator, but are you really good at empowering people? You get people excited, but do you actually create the, do you give them the tools to equip them to be empowered? Not just to feel empowered, but actually to truly be empowered and execute on their own. So it's about trying to figure out how you can actually take them from good to great once you've been able to wipe out and prove the fact that they actually are a strong manager in that example.
And is this where you come in and start talking about like, what can I replace that belief with?
Yeah. I mean, that's an interesting example because they, you know, if they are actually a good manager, but yeah, it's, you know, try to get them to accept some aspect of their management style that is positive. So I think that's a really important piece. It's like not just to have some blanket statement that, hey, instead of saying I'm a crappy manager, I'm a great manager, and that they're not going to get there right away. It's like, well, try to find something narrow that they can actually latch onto that actually is true and get them to truly believe that it is true.
And this obviously isn't it's probably not a one-off conversation. This is something that needs to happen on an ongoing basis. So yeah, talk to me about what that looks like.
Well, as part of those ongoing coaching conversations, and when I say coaching conversation, I don't mean just having a formal coach, but as managers, we should all be coaches to our teams. I think a lot of people say they have one-on-ones, but those one-on-ones are really status check-ins, okay, how you track it on your scoreboard. But what I mean is truly developmental conversations, which ideally happen weekly. And I know that the challenge that everyone says is, I don't have time. Okay, yeah, I get it. You don't have time, but yeah, you do. Especially if you can invest in your people and you can get them to double their output, and they're going to actually need to come back to you less frequently with questions. So it's taking time for truly coaching conversations that are centered on what they actually want to achieve. Like, what are they working on? What are their growth areas? How are they tracking on developing new behaviors and new skills? So it's within the context of those coaching conversations over time that you can start to revisit those things. So, you know, how are you progressing on, you know, what's your perception of your ability to manage this past week? What's one thing you did well? What's one thing you could work on? And then obviously coaching them around what they want to work on, why it's important, and then give them some of that how-to as well.
Interesting. We hadn't planned on taking this detour, but as you kind of brought it up, and I don't know, it was just the way you mentioned it. You know, a lot of people do one-on-ones, but they're really more check-ins than they are developmental conversations. I'd maybe sort of reflect on my schedule, my weekly schedule. And I certainly do one-on-ones, and you're absolutely right. They're definitely more like, how are you doing? What do your numbers look like? Are there any fires? Is there anything I can help with? We do quarterly development planning, but I've been doing quarterly development planning meetings for about 2 years with people that report to me. Weaving that in to the weekly conversations, I think, is something I've struggled with. So talk to me about, like, you know, we'll identify things that they want to work on in the QDP or QDR, quarterly development meeting process. We call it QDPs because process, and I'm great with acronyms. So talk to me about, how do I weave those into my weekly check-in calls without getting overly I don't want to overcoach, because especially when people are going through like a big lift, you don't want to push too hard. And so like, I guess question one, how do I balance when is the right time to like push a bit more versus not push at all and give them some space? And then the second piece is like, how do you keep track of the things that you're coaching them on, and then figure out, okay, what is it that I want to, you know, help them get 1% better this week? How do you pick that thing?
Yeah. So a couple of things I'd say first is, it doesn't always have to be as part, if you have those one-on-ones, they tend to be more, I'll call them transactional, because I would almost schedule, if you're just getting started, schedule a separate call. It doesn't have to be weekly, start monthly. I mean, quarterly, hopefully not, but at least monthly, ideally every other week, that the agenda is literally that person's agenda. What do they want to focus on? What they're trying to achieve. I think in terms of your question about how do you know how much to push and how do you know how much to bring it up? I mean, that's really, it is ultimately up to them. And that gets back to the whole intention piece, right? It's like, is people have to have that burning desire to be, in my mind, great leaders are also those same things. They have to be, have a burning desire to be great. They have to be introspective, so reflection, and they have to be willing to put in the work. And otherwise people have a really difficult time getting better. They tend to be the woe is me. They tend to be more that fixed mindset versus the growth mindset. But that said, it's, they have to want to get better, and you have to help create that case for why, like what's the benefit to them also? Like, what's in it for me in terms of if they're to be a better seller or a better manager, like why that actually matters is really important as well. So getting them to individualize that is helpful. Helping them understand what the benefit is to the team, to the organization, to themselves. Obviously we tend to be pretty self-focused for the most parts. And, but yeah, that's your role as a coach. And a lot of the work that we do is help to transition managers, quote unquote managers, into coaches of their teams. So it doesn't mean they lose the job of being a manager because they're still focusing on deadlines and deliverables and outcomes, but they need to also be a developer of people as well. And so it really is up to you to own their progress as well, but they have to own it also, especially if they're coming to the table with an agenda and says, hey, like, here's what, you know, hey, Colin, here's what I want to focus on this week. Or, you know, you reaching out proactively to them, say, hey, you know, hey, Mike, hey, Sarah, you know, we have this upcoming meeting. Love to get your thoughts of where I could be helpful to you in terms of what you'd like to focus on. And then I think also having a bit of a structure can be helpful as well in terms of your own head. You don't have to necessarily lay it out for them, but in terms of how that flow of that conversation is going to go.
Cool. Thanks for the detour. I appreciate that. I think the biggest thing is let's say there's somebody that's listening and they're doing one-on-ones and they're a sales manager. They've got an account exec or an SDR that is that they're doing one-on-ones with. And they're coming to the table and let's say the manager is doing all the right things. They're having these quarterly development planning sessions and they're, you know, creating space every week for their direct report to come with these development conversations, but they're not coming. Right. I think there's one part in like setting the expectation that, hey, I'm here to have that. But if that expectation's been set, you know, I'm here to have those conversations. That's what we want, but they're not setting the agenda with those things on it. Is the intention not there? So you can't, like, coaching can't take place, or how do you handle that?
That's a good question. And it gets back to what you talked about. I forget the acronym, quarterly business process. And goal setting is pull back to that. You know, how are you tracking to your goals? What's getting in your way? What are some of the behaviors you need to be possibly learn or get better at to actually help you be successful and achieve those goals? What are the gaps that you're facing? So it's almost like I look at as a former marketer, I look at unaided and aided awareness, you know, and you're prompting them or you're asking for them. They may not always have something, but if you can bring something to the table, it's like, hey, based on in January, we talked about you wanted to really work on the ability to get into to do clients and to start to do some big game hunting and start to go after the enterprise clients, whatever it may be, and ask how they're coming along with that. What's getting in your way? What are some things that I can do, frankly, as your manager, as your coach, to actually clear some of those obstacles? And what do you need to do differently? What do you need to start doing, stop doing, continue doing that to be more successful and help you achieve that goal? So you can definitely bring content to the table. And I think it's helpful to actually have those goals as a bit of a roadmap. So a lot of times we'll work with executives and they may have these business goals, but we also have these learning roadmaps as well. It's like, what are those, as I mentioned before, skills, behaviors, experiences, perceptions they need to change? Because those really ladder up to help you achieve those goals.
Talk to me about what that looks like. Because that's something new. You know, I've done the QD, quarterly development process, but it's a meeting. It's not a process. So I've done these quarterly development reviews, QDRs. I always call them QDPs because there's wires crossed up here. How do I translate that into something that's a little bit more like, obviously it's not a Gantt chart, if you identify a few things, you don't want to be, you know, doing 10 of these coaching conversations or, you know, using the whole hour every week to be like, hey, where are all these things that you're not good at that you're not doing? Like, I don't want to overload them. So yeah, talk to me about what is that process for kind of laying out that roadmap?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I just meant more in terms of as part of that goal setting process is understanding what are those skills, behaviors, experiences, et cetera, that you want to be working on. Mm-hmm. And also trying to understand which ones are foundational. You know, if you want to have better executive presence, what does that start with? You know, it starts with just a basic to be, you know, strong speaker, to be good at asking questions, being a really active listener. There's a lot of things that underscore and reinforce some of those higher order things you're trying to achieve. So it's getting a sense for how those things are sequenced. Sometimes things are something's happened to need to happen before the other things. So many different examples of that. I mean, executive presence is one of those. Being a great coach to people or being a great communicator. So as I wrote all about and what the work that we do is about building leaders from the inside out. And I believe there's this parallel journey that we go on as leaders to become great. And I think we focus so much on the external piece, but there's so many things like the self-owning beliefs, our values, being more authentic, being a great active listener, being curious with people, asking good questions that really are foundational to, in that example, becoming a great communicator. So sequencing those things, yeah, if you want to put it into a Gantt chart, obviously I get you're a very linear process focused guy, which is great. And done many Gantt charts in my life as well as a consultant. But if you want to, you can lay those things out and maybe it's saying, hey, what's month one? Let's focus on this. Month two, let's focus on this. Month three, let's focus on this. But be sure you're revisiting those things because generally people don't just take one hill and they never slide back down. They may fall short a little bit. Hey, I'm going to really work on adapting my communication style to the audience, like we mentioned earlier, and they're going to fall short because their natural motive is to move fast, to be really direct, especially when we're facing stress and we're under pressure. We're going to go back to our old ways of behaving, our old ways of acting and thinking, frankly.
So, that's interesting. I was just thinking to myself, like, how do I do it internally? And we have that document. And I generally open it 4 times a year, or I'd say 8 times a year, because I open it once to fill out the feedback and to review just before I have that meeting. And then I open it up again in that meeting. And in fairness, like the doc is really mostly for the individual to set their own, but I'm not, like, if I'm not looking at that document on a regular basis, I'm probably not contributing to the reinforcement as much as I should. So I'm like, oh, yeah. here's an interesting gap in our process or in how I'm managing my people.
Definitely. And it gets back to how performance reviews were always done. And unfortunately, they're still done in this a lot of ways, which is it's an annual exercise, right? Mm. You review the performance, you set their goals, and 12 months later, you do the same thing all over again. But it's so many times you find something out, go, gosh, that would have been nice to know 11 and a half months ago. I actually could have done something about it. So the same thing goes with this, which is making sure these things are top of mind, making sure they're in your agenda in terms of some things you want to focus on. Ideally, if it's their agenda, you want to make sure that they own these things, that they want to work on those things. Yeah, we said, hey, these are the 5 things for this year, but what's your highest priority and why does that matter? And then focusing on those things because they're going to have a much higher level of ownership if there are things that they also want to work on.
That's great. Cool. I'm making a mental note to myself to put a link to their to each of my direct reports quarterly development report in like my one-on-one doc, so I know it's right there. I usually copy and paste the things into the header, but yeah, that's one thing that I'm like, ah, this will be a trigger for me to go and open it back up again. And I appreciate the detour. We were talking about, you know, the intention there. So if I'm coaching somebody that's struggling with the reflection step, how do I approach it?
That's a good one for sure. I mean, that's people just have a proclivity to be introspective or not. I mean, I think people can definitely change over time. I think it's like anything. I think it really starts with why, not to be cliche with the Simon Sinek piece. I think it applies to behavior change also, which is why does this actually matter? You know, like why is this trying to shift this behavior? Why does it really matter? And trying to get them to reflect on something that's ideally objective. And that's like why I love that assessment. I actually really love any assessment as a coach is it gives you an objective jumping off point. It's like maybe they don't agree with the whatever the assessment is, whether it's DISC or StrengthsFinder or StrengthsPoint Inventory. Well, can you see how someone might see that in you? Can you see how someone might also perceive that? And so you can start to get a tiny little bit of a wedge in the door to start to open that conversation and to create some of that reflection. But it's tricky. I mean, some people just are more or less inclined to do that. I know I was definitely probably, maybe I was introspective as a kid growing up as a younger person, but it's definitely something I've realized over time because there's just so much value that we can actually extract from knowing more about ourselves, especially if you're trying to be a better leader.
Mm-hmm. Do you journal or anything?
I do journal.
That's been one of those things that I've done. What is it? It was like a stoic journal. It wasn't a happiness report or journal, but it was one of those like reflect on your day things. That's been one habit that I've tried to kickstart a couple of times and I've just never never followed through on it?
Yeah, it's hard, right? We always have so much time. You know, there's books and concepts, you know, the miracle morning is a lot of things. Things can take 30 minutes to an hour. I think one way of reframing some of those journaling type activities is A, it's work. You know, and for me, I used to say, oh, if it's not client delivery, it's not work. You know, but what about building relationships? What about writing content? That's all work. The same way as journaling is the same way, frankly, that like taking care of yourself is, you know, whether it's meditating or going actually getting a workout in, is you need all of those things to actually be successful in your job. But journaling, I think, is, you know, Tim Ferriss talks a lot about, maybe it was Ryan Holiday who writes a lot about journaling as well, is I would write in the morning. Also make it non-negotiable, wake up early, set it on your calendar so you have to actually do it before you do anything else. But I think one thing that's been helpful for me is that sometimes I was like, I don't have anything creative to write, I don't have anything structured to write, but a friend of mine said, hey, sometimes it's just a way of getting all that mental trash out of the way, whether it's a self-limiting belief or you're frustrated because you didn't accomplish as much yesterday as you wanted to, or you're nervous about some upcoming deadline, or you're not tracking to your goals the way you thought you are or would be, because it's like math, you know, you subtract a negative, it's positive. So it's like the same thing. If you can get rid of some of those negative thoughts in your head, it's going to really allow you to start that day and be much more effective.
Really interesting. Yeah. Definitely something I'm going to reconsider, because the reflection step is absolutely critical. I mean, it's all I do is the sort of strategy of the business and manage people. And it's probably, you know, a good chunk of both would be improved by a little bit more reflection.
Yeah. And if you're struggling to actually do it, and is try to find something that would be an outcome that really would be value accretive to what you're doing, whether it's new idea generation, whether it's reflecting on how you manage and motivate people, like find something that's part of your existing goal hierarchy and layer that into that journaling process. That way it's like, okay, I got to get this done anyway, but I'm going to start doing it within the context of journaling.
What if I just don't want to do it? When I'm like, yeah, I understand the benefits and like, it sounds like a great idea, I just don't want to do it. Sort of is that the action step or is that the intention step?
That's the intention. So yeah, if you don't want to do it, you don't. If you saw the benefit, you'd do it, right? But if you're, you know, there's some question in your head of whether this is beneficial or not. And I don't think it's for everybody, right? Like, what's your objective, right? Which is the intention. Is it to create new ideas? Is it just to slow your mind and relax and get you more focused? You know, Tim Ferriss talks about journaling as a way to actually be like the general on top of the hill and can see the battlefield more clearly, like the smoke clears. And so I'm probably butchering the way his quote or the way he talks about it, but same idea. For me, that's why I journal, but figuring out what it is and why you actually journal.
That's interesting. When you describe it that way, like I have other things in my life and we don't need to go into them that like put me in that spot, the general on top of the hill. But we do want to segue into action and we do want to give you a chance to talk about the book here. So if I'm the sort of last step of your coaching framework, if you've got somebody who, you know, the intention is there, the reflection is there, they're just not following through with the action. How do you approach them, or how do you approach the situation?
Well, I would start with asking the action step, like what's something you can actually do to start to chip away at that self-limiting belief. And that could be replacing it with a more positive thought. It could be acknowledging your progress. So, hey, you thought you were a crappy manager, and acknowledge what's one thing you did well in the last week that can start to help to chip away at it a little bit as well. Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. And just getting them to figure out, okay, what's the step that you can actually take to actually address that? What's something you need to go learn and go do? What's an experience you need to gain? Hey, you mentioned that, you know, your resume is just not ready for that. You haven't sold to this kind of client. Well, okay, well, what's something you can actually go and do to start to take action? And tying it back to the why, like why it actually matters. Hey, if you're able to go sell into, you can land one more enterprise account per quarter, you're going to double your numbers or whatever it may be, right? So it's giving them that wasn't it for me, that why, which is really powerful in terms of creating some of that intention, which hopefully will allow them to take that action as well.
Love it. Darren, the time has flown by. Suddenly it was, we're at the, not at time, but just like 35 minutes, 45 minutes just kind of flew by there. So I want to jump right to, you know, we were going to talk about some self-limiting beliefs in the sales space, but I think those have kind of come up naturally. I'm curious, what are some firsthand examples of the impact or the outcome of you know, coaching somebody, I think being a leader, one of the most rewarding things is watching other people succeed. Right. And so can you talk to me about maybe, and is there a standout or maybe a recent story of somebody who you worked with on a self-limiting belief and it unlocked something for them?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's refers to a person that I was coaching, and there was he had a very strong belief that humility was a really important value for him, and it wasn't valued by the person that he was working with, you know, so his boss. And so in a way it started to create a self-limiting belief, right, about that being humble wasn't a value. So he had to start to figure out and wrap his head around that. So we did a lot of work around creating his own personal leadership brand, and humility was a huge pillar of that piece. And so over time, he was able to really lean on that humility because he's out in the marketplace. He's doing a lot of actually in a very similar sales type of role, influencing mm-hmm. people, meeting people, closing deals. And he was able to actually learn by doing that, being humble was actually a very positive thing. And he actually got tacit acknowledgement by his boss that said, hey, like, you know, he didn't say this, but it's like, okay, you can be successful by being someone who's humble because that's just part of who you are. So that was, it was like a perception that turned into a self-limiting belief, which actually became a towering strength, which was always a towering strength. It was all about managing that perception that existed.
That's super interesting. If you've liked the conversation so far and you're like, hey, how do I find out a little bit more about, you know, the coaching that Darren does? And I apologize because I think I might've said founder at Group 60 at the beginning, and I understand you're rebranding to the Savage Leader. But a lot of this can be found, is it fair to say a lot of this can be found in your book, The Savage Leader?
Absolutely.
Coming soon to a bookstore near you.
It came in January, actually. So published it on my wife's birthday, January 4th of this year. So it's on Amazon.
Nice. Tell me a little bit about the book.
Sure. So the book's called The Savage Leader. And so I believe, as I mentioned earlier, that there's this parallel internal journey that we go on as leaders to become great. And so many books, so many leadership courses, they send TED Talks. They talk about these externally visible behaviors, being a better decision maker, being able to project vision. And of course, those are really important attributes and competencies of leaders. But I believe that there's this parallel internal journey that's about identifying and anchoring to our values to help us make better decisions, whether it's for ourselves or for our teams or for our companies, how we become more authentic, how we connect in a meaningful way with our tribe. So through greater listening, greater curiosity, greater humility, and so those kinds of things. It's also about fostering greater levels of patience and perseverance, about lifelong learning, and then what I call the triad, which is basically the self-limiting beliefs that if left unchecked, unaddressed, can become doubt, which can become fear, which can really paralyze you in terms of what you're trying to achieve, whether an individual contributor, whether you're a leader, whether you're even a CEO. But it could also just be outside of the world of corporate America, whether you're a community activist, or just even someone trying to raise better adjusted kids as well. Or so whether you're being a teacher, whatever you're doing, is there's an opportunity for all of us to be better leaders. So that's what the book's about. It's about that internal journey that we go on to be great.
Right on. Where can we find it?
Search for The Savage Leader on Amazon, or just even a Google search on The Savage Leader. There's a lot of content that's out there, but Amazon is definitely the easiest place.
Right on. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show, Darren. I really appreciate you. If people are curious about your coaching services, they want to get in touch, what's the best way?
Yeah. So you can send an email to Darren@thesavageleader.com. That's a good way, or connect on LinkedIn. So you can find me with Darren Ranke on LinkedIn.
Right on. Thanks, Darren. And we'll see you all next week.
Great to be here.